I want you to tune in. Are you ready?
All right. So, how do you say your name usually? Like Rito or Rito?
It's Rito, yeah, but I don't really like mine.
Because a lot of English people, or yeah, they say Rito, right? And we always say Rito because it sounds more Dutch, but you are obviously not. So
yeah, who knows? Pavel, who knows where the name is from, man? I have no idea, man. Like, but
oh, you don't remember, really?
I mean, my father told me like some stories here, but because like it's part of my family name, you know? I wasn't so creative as you guys, you know? Like,
so part of your family name, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of my family name, yeah.
Well, we just stole it from a Star Wars book, so I don't know how creative that is.
It's great, but because I only saw the movie and like it took me, I remember you told me it's from Star Wars. I was like, from where? And then obviously when I got a little bit more introduced to that, you know, I was like, oh, okay, so there's...
Yeah, we were just sitting around in the studio and back then we just had a separate computer. So I would have my setup, bring it to Milan's home because he had a big room.
Okay.
And we would have two separate setups. And the way we would work together is we would have to press space bar at the same time. So it was like 3, 2, 1.
To synchronize.
We had to do it like 10 times before we could synchronize stuff.
Wow.
So we were actually sort of DJing while we were producing, you know, it's weird. But then we didn't have a name yet. And we came up with all sorts of horrible stuff. And finally, Milan opened the book because he was a fan of Star Wars since a kid.
Okay.
And he had all the books as well. And we just went through different words. And the minute he said that, it was like, yep, that's it. That's it. You know, it's just like click.
It's very good name. It's very good name. I mean, it's very tricky with the name. So basically like, I mean, I actually never thought about like, I mean, you came up with an amazing name. I never thought about like alphabetical order ever.
No, of course not.
You know, so that never crossed my
you
mind.
Mean like obviously. When you're on a flyer or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that some people, you know, then change their names in order to, you know, like be.
I know. Because, I mean, back then, all the billing wars were not really, no one was really aware of it or it wasn't really a
and,
thing.
And as well, I mean, it never crosses my mind at all.
But yeah, that's true. I mean, if it's alphabetical, you're screwed.
Yeah, so I'm somewhere like before the end. There was a very short moment. Where I thought, oh, there's this amazing name like DJ Shotgun.
DJ Shotgun, really? Oh, man. Did you have any other ideas?
No, well, I mean, I think I happily forgot them.
Okay.
So yeah, but then, you know, that was very quick. And I remember my ever first gig, actually, international, was in Holland. And it was actually in Rotterdam, in the night town, you know, in the club.
Sick. Yeah, I remember that place.
You know, and I played there like that night was like Dylan, Tech Itch, you know, and
Freak
I played.
Night, right?
Yeah. And it was like, because like the Gareth, you know, like he was doing the party, you know, at the time from Perspect.
Oh, right. Yep.
And they wrote down my name wrongly. So instead of Rito, they did like Ruby. So my first ever international gig and I was as a Ruby. So.
No, Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby, man. So, do you
still have the flyer for that event?
I have to look for it, but yeah,
I remember
like
door,
I wanted to, you know, I was like, oh, this is amazing, like my first international gig, and then I was like, Ruby, who is that guy?
Oh man, that's not even close.
Yeah, but I mean, it was still great experience, and I remember actually there was a time when I think it was one of the first vinyls from Noisia, was Prolix and Noisia. It was on Payload, if you remember that label.
Yeah,
so I forgot the name. It was the call-up, but it was amazing. And I bought it in Triple Vision. So I went and I bought the vinyl and I was very happy. I was like, yeah, this is amazing. So it was an amazing experience, but I remember that one was a funny one.
Do you remember when that was?
I think, you know, there might have been like 2005 or something.
And you were producing before you were DJing, right?
Yes. Yeah. I guess it was same with you guys, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Because we had no idea what DJing was. We just, you know, we heard this crazy music and we just wanted to make it.
Yeah, totally same. And, totally same, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the DJing came afterwards, but it's a lot of fun. But yeah, production is still, you know.
Yeah, always, because like I think it's very different. I enjoy DJing, you know, because it's a great contrast. Yeah, I mean, most of the time in the studio, I mean, you at least have guys around sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when you are like a solo producer, you know, there's no one ever, you know.
Yeah.
So then you go to the gig and then you can actually talk to some people, you know, and it's nice to have some feedback. But as well, sometimes it could be very, very interesting because like you all the time by yourself and then it's like this huge amount of people and you're just trying to talk to everyone and then they disappear again. So it's
a huge difference. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, for me, with the music, is like I was totally amazed. I was like, how can you do anything like that, you know? And I think I still have that. Like I'm still like amazed. Like, how do you do this?
Do you remember what you were listening to before you started?
I mean, I can easily tell the initial spark was the Prodigy. Like that's
yeah.
That's like yeah. I
think that's true for a lot of electronic musicians.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. I heard the experience, and it's very interesting. Like I truly can say I had a life before I heard that and after.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because like I was supposed to be a tennis player, you know. I played tennis,
that's
you know.
Right.
You know, when yeah. I was younger and so only thing I knew was just, you know, going to the courts, you know, and playing and exercising, you know, and doing all those things, you know. And yeah. music was around, but I enjoyed it, but I never was like, oh, this is my music, or this is like, I was just a normal consumer. I really never cared. Yeah. Like it was, yeah, this is nice or whatever. And yeah. then I remember when I heard that, I was like, wow. And it's funny. Like, I mean, to someone, it could be that they had like, I definitely had a profound experience without any chemical substance, but just the music. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you just enjoy music enough, you don't need anything else really. It's just like, it can be just the music that sort of gets you high in a way.
Yeah, that totally. I can easily tell that got me super high.
Exactly. No, I can. Yeah. And you always lived in Czech Republic, right?
Yes. I mean, there was a moment when I went to, I lived in London actually in 2000.
Really?
Yes. Okay. For half a year. And what was interesting that I went to the Metalheads nights, you know, at Dingwalls
nice.
And Camden Town.
Legendary.
You know? And I remember yeah. I was like, wow, this is totally like, it was dark, you know, it was like Loxy was playing there, you know, and I saw Goldie yeah. and obviously that was interesting. I never thought like I would ever release on that label. That never yeah. as well crosses my mind, but, yeah, that definitely was something that, participated in the, you know, taste making, you know, part.
Yeah.
And as well, I lived in Sydney, when I went to study for sound engineering, I did the SAE thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. But why did you choose Sydney? Because they were all over the place, right?
Yes, they are
or
everywhere.
Least, I think they are.
I think they are everywhere, but in Czech Republic.
Really?
Yeah, they are not in Czech. But it was like when I was...
Okay, so you had to choose something.
Yeah, yeah. But obviously, the obvious choice would be maybe, you know, London, right? Because like, you know, yeah. at the time, you know, a lot of great engineering was coming from London, you know, and I was actually thinking about
still.
It. But then I already lived in London and I was like, okay, maybe I should go somewhere where I haven't been yet. Yeah, I actually wanted to go to New Zealand, but then at the time I was trying to find out how to make it happen, you know, because like obviously I wasn't so...
The school was there in New Zealand as well?
As well, yes. But, okay. You know, I mean, I needed to, because like, I mean, I put all my money into the cost of the school, but obviously I had to go to work, you know, so, and they yeah. told me that it's slightly more accessible to find a work, or easier to find a work in Sydney than in Auckland, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so let me just go to Sydney then.
And how did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, it was very different. I remember it was maybe the third night when we were sleeping in the hostel. I like woke up yeah. like 3 o'clock in the morning and I was like, what have I done? What I'm doing here? You know, like
the hostel experience. Yeah.
You know, this like surreal moment, you know, but then obviously I was very, very happy that, you know, I always wanted to study, or this was the first time actually when I studied something that I had true passion for, you know?
Yeah.
So it was totally different. You know, I mean, I was very excited, you know, I mean, I tried you know, to do all, you know, and researches and everything, you know, and you know, that really changed a lot, I think, you know, when you truly study something that you have this passion, you know, for.
And you actually ended up working in studios as well, right?
Yes. I think this is actually...
Besides your own, yeah, but like professional, big, like recording stuff.
And, yeah, it's a big part because like I've learned Pro Tools there, you know, and when I came back to Czech Republic, I really wanted to do just drum and bass, but... my mom at the time was like, oh, you should be more, you know, like maybe you should look for a studio job, you know, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
It's not her. It was my decision, but I was like, yeah, maybe this right, you know. So I looked for the studio job, and actually at Czech National TV, there was they were looking at the time for like a post-production person. So it's like when you do like all the additional things when you work on a movie. But very shortly, they were like, yeah, we're looking for someone for the recording studio, and we know that you studied that. Do you want to join? And that's when I joined. And I worked there for quite a while, actually, like maybe six years in the recording studio, and then I actually.
So while you were making drum and bass.
Yes. So it was like nonstop working actually, and yeah, that definitely after years it caught up with me. I had them like as it could happen. Nice, beautiful burnout.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They offered me if I would join like a mixing studio for cinema, you know, like the big hall for mixing movies for the cinema.
Oh, really?
And it was a huge challenge. You know, I was like, wow, okay, then maybe I should take this, you know. So I took the offer, and I spent like 3 years actually mixing the movies for cinema in inside, like, because when you do, it's like huge studio that basically supposed to be as the size of a cinema, because for the acoustics you need to, you know, you need That's to get incredible. The sound right. It's so
the mixing desk is like right in the middle of a cinema.
Yes,
basically.
Yes, exactly. Sick. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
is that where you met George Lucas as well? Because you showed me the picture.
Yeah,
once.
It's actually George Lucas. I actually met in the recording studio. I recorded music for him because like he was producing, I think one of the last movies he was producing was this called like Red Tails. The movie nobody knows about.
No, I don't know it.
yeah, that like it's a movie about like black pilots during the Second World War.
Okay.
You know, and he actually he came to Prague to record the score, and there was like one they just needed like a like additional music for the score, and I just got a like message, can you do this recording like on this day? I was like, yeah, fine, yeah, no problem. And I came there and I see like, wow, this is George Lucas. Hello.
Crazy. Yeah.
So that was it was interesting to have like George sitting behind you, you know, and be like, yeah, maybe.
Oh, man. You have to perform well, right?
Yeah, very, very surreal moment. And most of the time, I'm not like the guy who asks for the pictures. But this time I was like, man.
No, you got to do it.
I got to do this.
Yes.
And obviously there was like this whole production team with him. And I was like, I asked them first, you know, I was like, do you think it's okay to ask, you know, Mr. Lucas, you know, for a photo? Like, no way, man. I mean, he doesn't like it, you know.
Really?
And I was like, really? Okay. But I mean, I talked to him, you know, during the recording, you know, and he was always very, very, very nice and pleasant, you know. And so I actually, during the break, I came to him and I was like, I'm sorry, George, but would you mind to take a picture with me? And he was like, yeah, for sure. Just bring it on. And and the producer that produced all the Star Wars with George was there and he took the picture. So it was very funny.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So yeah, that was a funny one. But then obviously, then just with the burnout, then, you know, because when you are in the cinema, in the studio, you know, it's all the time dark, you know. So I was in the dark all the time, you know, listening to this loud, you know, movies, you know, and then I tried to go to my studio and write music, you know, and there was a moment I was like, I just couldn't do anymore because I was like, okay, I just don't know what I'm doing anymore. So I had to decide and very surprisingly, I choose to quit the movies and try to focus 100% on writing music and still sound engineering for movies. Yeah.
So the last time we saw each other was at our studios. We did the writer's camp.
Yes.
How did you enjoy that experience?
That was amazing. I mean, first of all, thank you for bringing me over. It was great. I had a great time.
It was a pleasure, man.
And it really inspired me that I'm rebuilding my studio now. I mean, amazing spots.
What are you changing in your studio?
Everything. I'm building a new one. Yeah. So hopefully within 2 or 3 weeks, it will be finished. We know how important the acoustics are, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought like my room is kind of okay, you know, and I did a few little things, you know, and I thought this is fine, you know. But then I listened to some of my tunes in your studio and I heard the frequencies that I didn't hear in my studio. I was like, oh, wait a second. How is this possible? This is I didn't hear this, you know. And I remember like we worked like one afternoon on this track in your studio, actually, with you and with Patrick, you know. And I think the outcome, the sound outcome of that clip was actually not bad, you know, like within the afternoon.
Really,
you know, and I was like, wow, this is very surprising, like how quickly we've managed to get quite a good sounding thing. It's a combination of as well of many things, but I was like, okay, so I mean, maybe it's a time to get serious as well, you know. And
I did like your room though when I was there, you know, it did sound good and there's lots of vibe in that room.
Yes, true, but I then concentrated on the sound. I listened to it, you know, and I was like, okay, I mean, it's too much. The low end is not precise. I get the vibe, but not the individual notes, the length of the notes, you know. So I could hear it in your studio.
You're very critical because your sound is already really good, man. It's amazing. So do you remember how we got started on our collab, the Time Lords?
Yes, I remember.
That was a while ago, right?
I just don't remember how the conversation sparks, but maybe we were talking about the Tenet movie or something like that.
Well, trailers in general, because you showed me some of the stuff you were doing for your demo trailer,
Yes.
And it was really amazing. And then we started looking at like sound design for trailers and stuff. I showed you the Tenet one that I really liked.
Yes.
And then like a long time after, I sent you the intro that I'd sort of made that sounded a bit like it. It was definitely a big inspiration for that tune. And then you took it to the drop, basically, because there was no drop at all, right? There was just the intro ideas.
Yes.
So how did you proceed with that?
First of all, the intro is so good. The hardest task, actually, I have to say, the anticipation after that intro is enormous, actually. It's enormous.
Because I think you had two ideas, and the first one was try to sort of go supersonic with it. Like the build-up is there, and then you go like super mega big drop, and then it didn't quite feel right, and then you went back and got that minimal drop that just has like the bass and the dark atmosphere. And it's like, yeah, that's it. That's where we should go.
I remember there was a moment I literally walked out of the studio and I went to the store and I bought an ice cream and I went to the park because I just couldn't figure it out.
Focus.
I was like,
yeah,
I just don't know how to do it.
I give up. I go back to George Lucas.
I was like, I just don't know. And then I was like, okay, let me think about it. And and what I did, I was like, okay, so this has got the vibe of Tenet. And I was as well listening to the score and I was thinking, maybe we can go like down, you know, and build it up again, you know. And I think it really, it surprised you because kind of, you know, the expectation is so big, you know, so you think like now it's going to drop like something that totally destroys everything, you know. But because you go slightly different, it's a nice surprise. You go, oh, okay, I didn't expect this, you know. So I was very happy that you liked it because I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, I mean, let's see.
Oh, yeah, immediately. I heard it on the phone first, which is not always a good idea because you can hear everything, like deep subs and stuff you cannot really hear.
Yes.
But I already knew it was like, yeah, this is it, man. And then we continued to work on it and it's just been, yeah.
It took a time, obviously, to... So we got to the final form, that was a breaking point, definitely, like the ice cream.
That's great, man. Just the reset, the mental reset. I love it.
Do you ever have that? Like that you make, like, say, like an intro and then you're trying to like...
Lots of times.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But I don't really have a lot of moments where it's like I need to do something and then come back, like... Usually it's just like a different session, or it can be sometimes when you're working together with someone, you just sort of keep working at it until you sort of force a breakthrough. But at the same time, when you force something, it doesn't always work. So yeah, it's difficult, man, to get like the right drop for something or the right feeling for something. Yeah, but I don't really, we have a nice outside area where we can, we're here.
Yes.
We have a nice little bench outside where we can have a coffee or a beer or whatever and just chill out for a sec. But yeah, the ice cream in the park, that's a totally different experience.
No, it was a breakdown. I lost it. Because like, of course I wanted to, you know, I mean, I wanted to be good because like I was so inspired by the intro that you have made, you know?
And the frustrating part is you can get to a certain level of like, let's say 75 or 80% of where you want to go within like the first half day or day, and then it's frustrating when you spend the rest of the week getting it to like 60% of where you want to be when you feel like I was at 80%, what happened, you know, I was supposed to go to 100. Yeah, you just have to roll back and then the project's like, you know, not working anymore where you want it, and yeah, it's so frustrating, man. Sometimes we have like 10 different things running at the same time. Or basically switch between projects, like a remix for this one and a collab with that one and another collab and then another tune for yourself. And then the idea is that you can take your time and you don't need to force a breakthrough, but something will happen in the meantime and you open it up again and it will just automatically come to you because you've been working on something else.
Mm.
So that's a nice idea. And with software, you can easily switch between stuff. downside of it is that sometimes you don't finish anything. So yeah, that can happen too.
Yeah. So this helps you, like, I mean, this kind of changing the projects, you know, for the inspiration kind of to flow.
Getting
a little bit
fresh ideas. Yeah. Or like, you know, because we're lucky to have multiple people, so we can also like bring someone else in, like, hey, can you have a look at this? I'm stuck here. Or and that works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't. But obviously doing a collaboration with someone is supposed to be the perfect way, because you sort of go somewhere together. And if it doesn't work, you can abandon it and start something else. And but you know, you have more drive to focus to get something to completion.
I wish that we can have sometimes like a whole week to make a track. So we have the luxury to actually first try as many as possible ideas, you know, and then decide, you know, oh, this one is maybe the best one that we
exactly
can.
Because you don't always go right for the good tune, you know. Sometimes you need to have like 4 tunes going to get like 2 good ones or something like that.
It's great for the mind that it doesn't feel, I mean, it actually works for myself, like that it doesn't feel like so restricted. Okay, you have this certain amount of time, and if you're not going to come up with this great idea within half a day, you know, I mean, everything is going to be bad because you have to deliver right now on the spot.
I've heard from some producers actually that they, in order to force themselves to finish something, they plan a mastering date with a mastering engineer. So they have to be done by that day.
Oh, that's
quite a good trick. I've never done it before because we don't really use a lot of mastering, but I thought it was a cool trick. I don't remember who said it, but
no,
set the mastering date and then work towards that. And then you have a deadline, because obviously, you know, we have our own label. So our deadline for us is like non-existent, because we're also the label boss. So we can say, next year is fine too. Yeah, so sometimes you need that deadline. Otherwise we can become completely, you know, not lazy, because we're always working, but we're always working on different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes you need that focus and have like, you know, this is the end date. This is when we're going to do this.
There was a moment when I didn't have any internet in my studio, and I have to sometimes, I think I should do it in a close future again, because these days I scroll through so many things, man. Like I always get this idea. It might be music related, you know, it could be new plugin or what is the new deal or what is this, or you're researching something, but then the mind gets very fragmented, you know, and I'm not the person who can handle like multitasking, you know, I'm very,
you
know,
need to do one thing well. Yeah. So what else are you working on? Like other releases or?
Hopefully very soon there will be this track that I wrote for Lateral Opening.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because you do that as well, right?
Yes. Yes. This year.
How many years have you done that?
I think I did the first ever, which was like 2014 maybe, and then I worked on one with Justin Counter-Strike. That's when the Lateral track was actually created, and then I've done one track for the opening. I think 2018 or 19, I don't remember exactly. And then obviously after COVID, we talked to the guys.
Return.
And now we're just trying to do things together and take slightly different approach. And yeah, so it's very exciting.
Nice. Looking forward to that. I mean, Let It Roll is such a legendary festival. It just feels like the center of drum and bass and in that weekend, you know?
Yeah, it's very inspiring. And it's
at last Let It Roll, you were pretty nervous backstage right before the opening show, man. Because it's like, I can imagine it's so much pressure to do this and, you know, to have people see it for the first time, and so much work goes into it.
Yeah,
I can
and
totally appreciate that.
Totally.
You were different guy afterwards. You're like, yeah, can let go a bit. And it was fun.
Yeah, it is true. Because of course, it's not only you, you know, I mean, you know, there's this huge pressure, right? And because like, I mean, you try your best, you know, and that's the only thing you can do, right? And everything else is just outside of your control, you know. If you start a track, so what is your, do you have like a routine that you go through, or is it, do you try to as well change it up so it's not repetitive, you know, or do you have this kind of golden way you do things?
I wish I had a golden way of doing things. Well, one thing that's always helpful and problematic at the same time is I start with intros a lot,
mm-hmm.
but obviously, like you described, it's a lot of pressure to make a perfect drop for an intro that you wrote. And sometimes you write it in a key where it's like, it's kind of hard to do a drop with it. You know, if you're like in great intro in C, but then it's like, you know, how am I going to get to like something proper to drop it in? Because dropping it in C is like,
yes,
yeah, a bit difficult.
Not yet. We are not there yet.
No, need more subs. I mean, obviously it's a great, I mean, you can use any key is good for music, but for general sound systems, you mostly need to be an F or D sharp or E or something.
Mm.
So yeah, I really enjoy making, I know a lot of people don't like intros because they just see it as like something boring to get to the drop. I really like making music for intros because it's, I think it's where you have the most ideas, you know. You can have like cinematic soundscapes, or you can have basically a drop is just a lot of music at once, and an intro can be slightly more relaxed and a bit more interesting, I think.
Mm.
So a lot of times I start with intros and I just have a lot of them. And when we work on a track, like 50% of the time we'll start with a drop, obviously. And, you know, we hear something we like and then it's like, okay, could be interesting to try something like that. It could be drum and bass, but it could be any kind of electronic music, or not electronic music even, or just an idea from a movie or something. And then you think, okay, I really like Blade Runner, obviously, even the old one or the new one. It's, there's so much sound design going on there, and there's still stuff to explore for years. There's a lot of stuff in movies, you know. And okay, you think, okay, this Reese bass could start here and then go there and then take over another sound. And there's loads of ideas like that. And then you try to make a drop with it. And because you have all these intros lying around, you sometimes just combine it. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, this is really cool. Because the bad thing is you can hit a point where you could either lose a track or continue with it and it becomes really good. And if you already have like a lot of unfinished intros or musical bits, and it could be like different effects going through, like delays or reverbs or whatever, flangers. But it's more the point of you have a big collection of stuff that works well together, and then you can drop it in, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this works really well. And then you take it from like, you know, 50% of a track to like close to done, because it's like, oh, you have all of a sudden you have effects and stabs and melodies and progression. And then of course the hard part is, you know, making everything work and making everything interesting. But yeah, so having lots of different projects where it's like either music based or like heavy drop based, and then just combine it. And it also works that way with people, I think. When I work with Nympho, he always has a lot of ideas, and it's just like drums and bass, and then you just go through them. And I have a lot of intros or a lot of drops, and you know, you just combine the two.
So most of the time you don't start like, okay, this is going to be this track, and you try to create that track on the spot. You mostly like try to make these fragments and then be like, okay, which fragment is actually working for me, and how can I develop it further? It's very cool. Very cool.
Do you use a lot of hardware still? Because you had quite a few synths when I spent some time in your place.
Yes, it's for me the moment when the sparks actually happens. You know,
do you use the hardware actually in the productions, or is it more for getting ideas and getting something down?
In some of the tracks, the hardware might ended up being, I don't think in our call-up there's anything from the hardware. When it comes like for, let's say, some arpeggios, or when it comes like to some pads, you know, or even some synth lines, you know, I mean, I love using the synth just in front of me, because it has got that Blade Runner sound that we all kind of love, you know. It's something that resonates with me, and actually it took me some time to find a synth that I felt like, okay, this is the one I really want to have, because...
You're talking about the OB6, right?
Yeah, the OB6. Yeah. It is true that not always it's actually ended up in the track, because like you're trying to be very clinical, you know, and maybe you use the line, but you just layer it with something else, you know?
Yeah.
To get more definition or get this or that, you know? But I mean, for the vibe, it's just, for me, it really works. I want to use it more and more because I sometimes feel that I don't do many times these like sessions when you just randomly just experiment, that you just give yourself a goal, you know. You just say, okay, I'm just going to play with whatever it's in front of me, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm always saying I should do that more often, because then very interesting things could happen, right? Because like,
and that is what hardware is great for, just getting away from the computer a little bit and just recording everything, but have the speed and the key right.
Yes.
And that's all you need, really.
Yeah, yes.
That's what I do sometimes as well. Like, the trouble with software is it's great, but it's also like you can tweak something forever.
Yes.
So if you have a bit of hardware, if you run something through an effect and then record it, it's there. It's two tracks. It sounds good. You're done. You need to drag it in. And you know, it's, you're dedicating it a little bit, or you're, I don't know, you're printing it and it's there. And with software, it can be like something changing forever, you know?
Yes. And I think that it slightly helps with the pressure, you know, like, at the end of the day, you should enjoy the process. I mean, of course, it's not always possible because, you know, I mean, you're being professionals.
You can enjoy a little bit sometimes.
Yes. It's not always that. But it's okay because that's part of the game, you know. And of course, you know, otherwise you just cannot be professional because that's, I don't think we are at the age when you should make music only when you feel like it, because you actually might never feel like it, you know. On the other hand, I want to try actually more these sessions, maybe once a week or maybe once 2 weeks, you know, just to let go of every concept that it has to be this and that, you know, and just try to experiment with all the synths that I have around, you know, and see if that's gonna, you know, lead somewhere. You might surprise yourself, because sometimes the randomness to me, it always surprised me, and I think that's the biggest key to something in interesting. I don't know, but randomness to me seems like that's the way.
Yeah, or it's not completely random because you're controlling it.
Random accident, you like you I mean, with my clunky playing, you know, like you play something and then you play something that you actually didn't expect to play, and you're like, whoa, what was that, you know? And
yeah,
then it kind of goes from there. But so that's what I meant, like random, that it can happen and then kind of creates the spark and you just follow that.
Yeah. And also another thing for people when they're stuck, just make loops and samples, because we've been doing it during Corona. We did a pack for Akai, and we've done, like, you know, sample packs for our label.
Mm.
Lots of people don't believe in sample packs because they think, oh, it's too much someone else's idea, and you're selling that idea or you're buying that idea. But we always use samples as a starting point.
Mm.
And it's also a great way to really focus, because then you're forcing yourself to record or write 20 different sounds from this, 20 from that, 20 loops, 20 pads, 20 sounds. And because there's such a driving force, because you have a deadline, and you're doing this, you're recording it, and you actually come up with great ideas because you're just doing it. It's a whole practice. The whole idea is just do it and something will come out. You know, the hard part is starting and moving on and getting going.
I totally
agree. So even if you just make
a
pack for yourself, make samples for yourself and put them in folders or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just move on. Like set a clock for 10 minutes for a sound or something, you know?
No.
Just move on. Make stuff.
I agree, because like I totally see that I enter a different state of mind when I'm doing, like, let's say these kind of samples, you know. I've done them a couple times, not so many times, but I remember that it surprises me that I'm like, okay, so I'm going to do just bass lines now, like let's say 20, 30 bass lines. And you just don't think so much, because you don't think it has to be this perfect, the best bass line ever you heard in your life. You know, you're just trying, okay, so how can I make a good bass line, right? And I found it to be way more effective actually doing that than actually, you know, I'm just in front of the blank Cubase and I'm like, okay, now I'm going to synthesize the best like bass line ever. And I'm like totally frozen.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if you get that, but I'm like frozen. I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Because you put pressure on yourself, and you just, the whole idea of making loops and sounds is like, there's no pressure, because you have to do 10 or 20. So they're not all going to be great.
Yeah.
And then while you're doing it, some are going to be great. But
yes.
You didn't mean to.
No.
So that's the whole idea. You're fooling yourself, basically. But it works.
Exactly. That's the one. You're fooling yourself. Yeah. And this is something that I'm trying to research, actually, because like I as well experience, I don't know if it's the same with you, if there is someone with me in the studio, and it doesn't have to be even person who like is a very into the production, it could be just a friend that he enjoys the music, and we can talk, and I'll be like, yeah, like, you know, how about this, and I try to make something, but somehow I just change how I do things, and I surprise myself. I'm like, wow, this is actually not bad, and I made it within quite a short time, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that ever happens to you, like that
yeah,
you,
yeah, yeah.
You have this
mostly with collaborations, yeah. Exactly, because there's pressure on, we need that sound to put everything together, you know, like the drop and the intro are not connected, we need that sound, and then a lot of times it's very difficult to roll your chair to the keyboard and mouse and work on something, and when it works it's like, yes, that's the sound we need, and then everyone in the room is like doing a little dance, like, yeah, this is it. That's the greatest feeling, man.
Yes,
that's why we do it, right?
Yes, that is actually, that's what it is, the tap dance in the studio.
Exactly. Yeah. You can have that moment by yourself too, but it's just like 10 times bigger when it's people in the studio.
That's, yeah. You know. Yeah, that's why I really enjoy it. And I think it's amazing that you have, you know, you've done the studio sessions, you know, in your
And we'll do them again, definitely.
it's a great feeling, you know, that you have all the buddies around, you know, and that you share the same thing, you know, you all kind of go your individual way, but there is a moment where you all kind of, you know, meet and you just kind of try to enjoy that as much as you can, because everyone is putting his time, you know, and doing his best.
Yeah,
you know?
It was lovely to have everyone here, and we'll do it again, definitely. And yeah, thanks for working on the collab. We'll do another collab.
For sure. It's on the way.
It is on the way, but I've been slow with it. I realize that.
It's not a problem.
Cool, man. Hey, thanks for chatting.
I mean, after our chat, maybe I'll have this, you know, like...
You'll have some ice cream in the park.
Let me just try and play whatever and let's see what's going to come up from there.
Yeah, do something random, man. Yeah, I'm going to do that too.